Welcome to the One Fault Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson, and today we're joined by, are you still Nick, do you still lock a nickname, Mo?
No, I'm back to be the Crown Prince of Charisma. I'm not letting them take that from me. I'm owning it. That's
All
mine.
right. There we go. We are joined by the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. Josh is not available today, so it's only the two of us, and there's lots to talk about. So where do we begin, Mo? Do you want to break down Survivor Series weekend, or do you want to talk about some of this wrestling news that's bubbling at the surface that you had predicted in a couple podcasts in the previous you can find on We Talk podcast, specifically in the Stick Boy podcast section. Where do you want to begin?
You know what? You drive the bus. I'm just looking out the window.
All
Wherever
right.
you want to go, I have opinions on everything. I'm angry about most things, and that's when I'm at my best. And if I'm not angry, then I'll make it up. I'll find some passion. And let's do this.
All right, well, let's start with Survivor Series weekend, and let's look at the two shows that we have witnessed, the NXT TakeOver War Games 2 and Survivor Series. Which
Now,
show are...
I have to say, I've given up on main roster WWE.
So
I've
you
mentioned this before. I
have
mean, I mean they I'm done. Like,
you're
I'm done. I this week almost deleted even recording Raw and SmackDown off my PVR. I am done. And I hear it was a good show, but I watched NXT. I
All right.
loved NXT.
Well,
Loved it. I'm like, why would I go and watch something that's just going to frustrate me after that I won't enjoy as much? Why? Why?
that's absolutely fair. I watched both shows, and I can tell you that NXT definitely, again, it's like easy home runs for that brand now. Like I think arguably they may be the best brand in wrestling right now. I feel like New Japan's kind of cooled off a little bit. It was
Yes.
very hard to live up to what last year was. Ring of Honor's had their struggles, but I feel like NXT is shooting threes, no problem.
Ring of Honor is doing great as far as their business is concerned. As far as buzz is concerned, they don't have a lot of buzz right now. As far as, just like what are they drawing in their house and how are their ratings and everything like that, they're continuing to go up, but they're nobody's talking about them. And like I say, I have lots of opinions on SmackDown and Raw and Survivor Series. I follow it, but because I follow it, because I find out what happens, I have no desire to go back because I just get mad.
Okay, that's fair. So let's talk about NXT TakeOver. Let's get to the good, and then we'll get your take on Survivor Series and where things are headed, main roster wise. Let's start off with the women's match. Two out of three falls. There was some speculation that the four horsewomen, Sasha, Becky could have not a Becky, but a Sasha Bailey could have got involved in some way to help build towards a four horsewomen versus ho four horsewomen feud. But we got a couple young plucky stars from NXT come out to help Kairi Sane, but ultimately it was not her night as Shayna Baszler retained. What are your thoughts and feelings on this, Mo? You're not Josh, you're Mo.
No, I'm not. Like we said, I have charisma, and I hope he listens. I hope. I really enjoyed the match. It was a really short match, especially for a three-fall match. They had a lot to fit on the show. I mean, one of the things that makes NXT so good is that they don't go so damn long. I mean, it's half the length of Survivor Series, and that's wonderful. A very good match. I mean, Kairi Sane is so damn good as a baby face. Like, if you study just the psychology of a baby face and the things that they're supposed to do, and then you watch her, she's just got it down, in an understanding of how to come across as a fiery baby face in a way that's very rare in 2018. There's a lot of good wrestling, but the fiery baby faces is a less common now, and she excels at it. And then, of course, this is an excellent way to get us the two no horse women, to essentially introduce them, with Shayna Baszler. And I mean, obviously, the long term, we still got to be looking at you know, we've still got to be looking at the Four Horsewomen versus the Four Horsewomen. And when that happens, the MMA Horsewomen need to be the heels. So, you know, which is kind of, I hope that all that they're doing between the women in NXT and the main roster is all leading towards that in the logical storyline. I hope.
I mean, you can only hope with the main roster WWE. I thought this was good. I liked the finish for the match. Like, I liked how the match ended. I thought that was a nice little way. Io Shirai's moonsault was downright incredible, and she did it in skinny jeans. So just awesome. I'm quite a fan of Dakota Kai. So they've got a good set of three baby faces that they can really run with, and building up the three out of four horsewomen is
what a great job. I mean, they did with, I mean, it looked like for a while there, it just looked like the NXT women's division was gutted. What a great job they've done of rebuilding it and making it as strong as ever, you know. And the finish was great because Baszler won clean. And yet, it, because of all the other stuff that happened in the match, though she got the final submission was clean, or pin or whatever, you know, the final fall was clean. Nevertheless, it came across like Kairi Sane came across kind of like she was screwed. She came across strong, you know, and yet on the other hand, Baszler, there's no doubt that she won at the end. So both of them actually, neither one of them had to look bad to do it. That was the genius of that that finish.
Oh yeah, no, and you've helped in that match. You've now propelled your next storyline, which I think is always key in programs like these. Is you finish things off, but you leave you create a thread that they can grab onto and move on to their next thing, whether it's someone comes up to challenge or if it's the way this was. I think obviously they're going to go with a six woman tag. That would be my guess. It could simply be at a NXT taping. That NXT is not taping until next week, so then we'll get a clear directive of where everything's going. But
I think that's most likely, though.
Yeah,
that makes sense in a lot of ways. Number one, they do give out, because they don't have so many big matches, they do give out big matches there, and it can still lead to something down the road, but they do give out big matches on NXT. Another thing that's key is it gives them a chance to edit it in case there's any errors, because, you know, these are some pretty green performers in the ring, and if you're live on NXT TakeOver, then you don't get that chance.
Yeah, and I think this will be a good way to introduce the NXT crowds really to Io Shirai, who I think is a tremendous talent, who I think she will definitely be what the women's division will be built around in a couple months, unless Vince gets her. Basically, at this point, I don't want anyone called up. I want them all to stay where they are in their happy little world in NXT, make it 2 hours, put it on FS1, and just let them run, because it's highly entertaining television, and I think...
Please don't make it 2 hours. That I have to disagree with strongly.
I think
don't.
The only reason I say 2 hours is because it helps sell a little bit more to advertisers, because then you can spread out advertisements on that. But the other thing is it gives other guys a little bit of chance to have... a little bit more shine and a little bit longer matches with some of these guys.
But what makes it stand out is the fact that you don't have to see a guy every week. That's what makes me interested in seeing them.
My only thing is I'm thinking in just how you sell it. But I think if they just did an hour, I think they'd be fine. If they made it 2 hours, I could absolutely see them making it 2 hours. But if they left it at 1 hour, NXT, that 3 hour block with NXT 205 Live and NXT UK, fly by. I have no issue sitting there watching all three of those and watching really just good competitive wrestling.
Well, let's split the difference and say 90 minutes.
90 minutes? That's fair. I think you can do 90 minutes, and that to me, it just opens up. You can have other guys wrestle 15, 20 minute matches, make it competitive, make it entertaining, and help build more guys up. That's my only thought process, but I think they've done a very good job with the women's division, because after the Four Horsewomen from NXT went up, there was a little bit of a lull. You had Asuka, And once Asuka went and Ember Moon went, then it was really like, ooh, this is kind of slim pickings, but they've done a really good job building up that roster. And I think they've got a lot of talent within that women's locker room that they can continue to build, and they should have no worries for at least a couple of years.
And they discovered even more talent in that, in the, you know, the Mae Young Classic. So, you know, the future is bright for the women's division. You know, all around, the future is bright in the women's division.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I absolutely agree. Shifting gears here now, that was a good match. But here's another incredible match. I'm a huge fan of him, even though he is no longer a Rebel Heart. Johnny Gargano versus Aleister Black. I really enjoyed the match. I like the storytelling, the way it was done. Johnny was booed at the beginning. Then you're kind of reminded why you like Johnny, because he's such a good wrestler. And then Johnny starts to do heelish things, and then you're like, oh yeah, no, I don't like you anymore. And just the story they told, and that ending line with Aleister Black was just like the cherry on top of a sundae.
Yeah, and I like the Aleister Black backstage with Candice LeRae segment on NXT this week too, which featured a lot of recaps, but you know, that was good. Even though not much happened, it just gave you a little taste. It was a hell of a match. And you had to think it was. And you know what? Aleister Black is really good, but there was no question that was the Johnny Gargano show. Like, he's so quick. It's insane. And his psychology and everything. Yeah, he's so damn good. I mean, this match, you know, he started the year. He was the best wrestler going, you know, the first few months of the year. And then it kind of had a little lull. But this is like a strong reminder that when it comes time to talk about best guy in the, you know, when you give out your awards this year, do not forget Johnny Gargano.
No, absolutely not. He has a potentially feud of the year. He has a match of the year and just general performer of the year. There's something about the way Johnny works. And as someone that's a big comic book fan, I love when he takes from little things like, when he's facing Ciampa, you get the feeling that he's kind of got the black symbiote on him and it's corrupting him slowly, and his obsession with defeating Ciampa finally drove him to the edge. And his line, the line that he took from the Punisher, and his gear was inspired by the Punisher, of "You're just one bad day away from being me." I feel like that's the Punisher line. I saw that initially and thought that could have been the Joker from the Killing Joke. All it takes is one bad day, but both could very well be within the realm of being from that line. But I thought that, I mean, damn it, Johnny's good. Johnny is really, really good. And yeah, he's so smooth in those ring. There were a couple times in that match that are just downright impressive what the two of them did. Where does Johnny go from here, and where does Black go from here? I wanted to get your thoughts on where the next stops are.
You know, I think, obviously, I mean, Black and Ciampa has to happen. But it's a weird thing. Like I say, I don't get the feeling that the Black and Gargano's, because, I mean, I can't remember her name, but the announcer on NXT, she's asking him, "Are you done with Gargano? Is that it? Is it over?" And he's not saying anything. And then he runs up to Candice LeRae, and she just looks at him, and he just looks at her, and it's not over. So, and I don't want it to be over, quite honestly. You know, you don't set up a feud like that with you know, a guy out for that long and a great storyline, simple great storyline, like most storylines are, and set that up for as long as they did, and just blow it off in one. I don't think there's so much more to be done with this.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the other thing. We talk about this great storyline, but this is born from an injury that wasn't planned. This was not the plan, but they adapted, they changed, and they responded accordingly. And it's worked out wonders for Johnny Gargano and Aleister Black, because I think if you have another match, I would like to see Black get to Ciampa. I could see him maybe facing him in NXT television. He's still owed a title rematch at some point. So I could see them do something along those lines and Johnny gets involved, but I am perfectly fine if this is the next, if they face off again in the next takeover and Johnny gets his win back.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I could definitely see, it's weird because, you know, Ciampa has to come and play back into it. Does it become a three-way? Does it become a four-way? I mean, who knows? It's, you know, booking what it should be like is like, and this is the way NXT is. It's like Bruce Lee said about fighting styles. You be like water. If you pour it into a glass, it takes the shape of glass. If you pour it into a bowl, it takes the place of a bowl. You know, the shape of a bowl. It's adaptable to what it is, and yet it can break down. It can break down a mountain if it has long enough. That's kind of how it should be here. Booking should be, you should be a fluid, adaptable thing. It should be like water.
I absolutely agree. And that's the thing where if there's a new little wrinkle that is discovered in these in these NXT tapings heading into the next takeover special, they could be adaptable to it and they will adjust and they will make it work. And I have no reason to doubt NXT TakeOver topping Royal Rumble. I have no doubt in my mind for the next one. And I mean, the thing is, and as some of our listeners may have heard, and you as well, I've officially set and ready to go to WrestleMania this year. And I've got a coin toss right now going for the Saturday. I really want to go to the MSG show, but if the Elite's not there, that kind of take, because I will openly admit I'm 100% behind those guys, and it makes me kind of go now, okay, I can see Okada and Tanahashi potentially, or I could see an NXT takeover show, and I quite like the NXT takeover show. It's definitely a decision I'm going to have to make sooner rather than later, but NXT has done such a good job that it has me sitting there thinking, what do I want to do on that Saturday? Because
it's going to be interesting also which one will be the hotter ticket as far as scalpers are concerned. And I do suspect that'll be the New Japan ROH show.
Yes. And then there's a lot of factors going into all that. But I think regardless, I think either show you go to, I think you're going to get a good wrestling show. WrestleMania is purely to be there for the first time ever to see that spectacle and be involved in something and be like, hey, I've watched this for almost 26 years and I'm finally at my first WrestleMania and this is really cool. But for me, the day that matters the most is that Saturday and what's going to entertain and enthrall me the most.
I thought you were like 14.
Pardon? No, I might look 14, but I'm almost 26. I'm sorry, Mo.
Oh, what the hell?
I know.
No, 26, you're a baby.
I know. It's crazy. Wow. You're only in your mid-30s, right, Mo?
Oh, I think the underwear I'm wearing is in my mid-30s.
Oh, God. Shifting gears from that that lovely image implanted in everyone's head. another really good match. And, boy, this I want to see this guy live. Velveteen Dream and Ciampa. First off, what do you think of Dream's entrance?
Oh, I love Dream's entrance. Are you kidding? That he's speaking to me with that one. You know, that was awesome. That was awesome. Yeah, I wasn't sold in this match at the beginning, but boy, did they ever have me by the end.
Oh yeah. The one thing I will say, I described this to Josh is what I think Velveteen Dream is. Velveteen Dream is basically a creator wrestler in a WWE video game that he has the moves of all his favorite wrestlers. His attire adjusts to his favorite wrestlers, and he's got a wicked finisher and a wicked look. And he looks like someone that a video game would spit out. And I love it. And that's not a knock against him at all, because I think that's something almost different for him. It feels like he's a guy that is just a fan that's incredibly athletic and incredibly skilled and incredibly charismatic that gets to live out this dream that he's had, and I can't help but be behind him 100%.
Yeah, no, I don't know that I can change much on what you just said. I mean, even this match and the character itself, when I first heard about it, didn't think it was going to work, and I was very, very wrong.
You know, I remember seeing the gimmick and being like, I don't know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. We've seen stranger things in wrestling work before, and I think what sold him, what sold Dream, was his feud with Black. That was his first big feud, and he just went all in on the character. All in on the character, and he had a good look. When he announced that his finisher was the Purple Rainmaker, everyone lost their mind, because you know what that's a play on. And you know this is absolutely a guy that is the pinnacle of the student of the game. When you describe someone as a student of the game, that's Velveteen Dream. And I just think it shined through again tonight against Tommaso Ciampa, who...
Tonight?
You know, not tonight. Oh, my God. I'm discombobulated.
At TakeOver, yeah.
At TakeOver, he shined through, and Ciampa shined through. Like, you can't say enough good things about Tommaso Ciampa and what he's been able to do in ring off this character. This guy had a good match against Samoa Joe a while back, a long time ago on NXT, and I thought, you know what, I like this guy. He's a decent little guy, and he's got a nice look, but I always liked Johnny a little bit more. I got to see DIY versus Revival in their 2 out of 3 falls in Toronto, which was an incredible match. I liked both guys. And then when he turned, I'm like, oh, well, it'll be okay, but Johnny will shine through. And Ciampa has proved time and time again why you can't doubt Tommaso Ciampa until he gets to the main roster and Vince gets his hands on him. But that's a different story.
Oh, that's a different story. It doesn't hurt, though, that he looks just like a mini-me Hunter nowadays.
I think that was done on purpose.
Gotta be, dude. He looks so much. But, you know, just go back to the Dream just for 1 second. I think the one thing he's missing is I think he needs music that sounds more like something Prince would have done. Yeah. His music it's fine. It's good. It actually suits him, but it doesn't sound like it needs something to be a little bit more like a 1984 Prince song, a little funkier, got a little bit more, you know, of a dance feel to it, something like that. That's the one thing I think that he needs. Ciampa has been, I mean, I was a big fan of Ciampa in ROH. I thought he never got his due there. Injuries and just timing and different things. He never quite, it looked like a few times like he was going to excel and move to the next level and, you know, feud with an Adam Cole and that type of thing. And it never quite got there, even to the TV title level. And a couple times he had some like really cool entrances and different robes and different things he was doing. And I was like, the guy's trying, he's going for it. But something wasn't quite getting him to the next level. And whatever it is he needed, he's unlocked it in NXT. And the fact that he was allowed to be a true heel in this day and age where that's become really rare, he bought fully in. Yeah. You know, I'm very impressed with him this year.
Yeah, he's another guy that when you look at just being a valuable player to your brand, he's instrumental in some of the biggest storylines on NXT. And it's crazy to think that this is a guy that came in and he shredded his knee last year and you weren't quite sure what his health was going to be like, but he's been managed to rise above everything. And like you said, he's found his spot in NXT. And he's a character that I don't think will work on the main roster because they won't let him do what he's done so well on NXT from Twitter, from his promos, from his behavior and his antics. I just don't think they will fully let him be what he was on NXT. And he's one of the guys that I want to stay on NXT because I think having a good heel like that is such a smart move to have. As well as you felt it by the end of that show, end of that match, that the crowd wanted Dream to win. And they booed when he didn't. And that's exactly the reaction you wanted.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, I mean, it was good. It was a match that when it started, like I was thinking, Dream is a really good entertainer. So there was a lot of spots of him stopping to entertain, to do the dream kind of the characteristics, the poses and these different things.
The leg
and
drops.
Just the different things that I thought to distract the fact that he cannot necessarily go at the level and have the match that I was expecting. And then he turned around and he and Ciampa, they did like as soon as they did the spot off the table, it went to a whole other level. And much like the 205 live match, the 205 is the one thing that's main roster that I am watching. You know, I love me some 205 live. And yeah, I mean, it just, it exceeded all my expectations.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with, and I'm excited to see where both these men go. What is next for Dream? Is he going to get that call from Vince, or do you think he's got another couple programs in NXT?
I don't think he's coming up until, I think he's a strong candidate to come up post-WrestleMania.
I would agree.
Now we see it's Lars Sullivan. That's his. Lars Sullivan will put over Keith Lee and then move up to the main roster.
And that's perfectly fine with me. Nothing against five-star Lars, but I'm okay with him going up to the main roster. I think he works. He probably work more on the main roster. That's someone that Vince can probably sink his teeth into.
Honestly, the Braun Strowman's biggest downfall is that he doesn't have a person who he can work with regularly to physically batch him that can be his Joker to his Batman. And Lars Sullivan, while much shorter, has the size and power and look and this and persona that he could be that to Strowman. So
that's a good call, Mo. I can absolutely get behind something like that.
I see that as I could see that as a feud that literally lasts years on and off.
Yeah, that I believe that eventually that could be that. Yeah, that's actually something I could see. That could be something that Vince fully gets behind.
Strowman now, he has the elbow thing and you know, took three people to put him out or whatever. But historically, this is a guy who falls off scaffolds and doesn't sell. Like, it's impossible that when you're a baby face, you have to get heat on somebody. And Strowman's whole gimmick is that nobody gets heat on him. He doesn't sell. He doesn't whatever. And eventually, as a baby face, that runs its course. And you can't have just that normal guy. You can't put him in there against The Miz or, you know, someone like that or Dolph Ziggler or whatever and believe that they could ever, ever, the way he's been booked, the way he looks, get heat on him. And if they can't do that, he can't opt long-term, be a strong baby face. And clearly he should be a baby face because we've seen otherwise what happens. So you need that right guy with him for him to work with. And the only guy I can see on the roster that really fits it is Lars Sullivan. I do think that's why he's coming up. I think that's what they're thinking.
No, that's actually a really good call. I really like that train of thought. Shifting gears. This is something that you told me that you thought were a five-star match, and that was War Games 2. Do you still stand by that five-star comment? Because you don't give those out.
I don't think I would quite go five stars, but I really love this match because I just love this. There were so many twists and turns, you know, with little things. There's so many little storytelling things that are in there, like, you know, like the War Machine pushing back Dunn and so he didn't get out of time, and then them locking Dunn in there and then having to get him out, and then the different stuff in the ring, the different people who were working on each other and teaming with each other, and then moves and the part where at the end where all of them were standing on the different sides, like they've had this epic war and now they're each looking at each other and they're just going right back at it. Like, there's so many little storytelling and psychology things. I think it wasn't the best wrestling I've seen, but it was some of the best storytelling I've seen, like psychology and just, yeah, that's what wrestling should be in the WWE.
I quite enjoyed this match. There were definitely a couple spots that I popped for the 450 off the ricochet jumping off the cage, the massive new version of the Tower of Doom, the trench warfare that we saw. There were a lot of really good moments, And I quite enjoyed this match. I do, and I was going to ask you your thoughts. Do you prefer having two teams taking on each other, or do you prefer the three teams? Like
I like two teams. I'm into the classics. Yeah, I like the, yeah. The same thing. Just like I like the Survivor Series, teams of five strive to survive. I mean, I like the classic stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more leaning towards the three. I think that creates a little bit more of a not like a gang up type offense defense for the wrestlers. It kind of creates that little bit of a. I felt like it flowed a little bit better, but this was still a really good match. No knock on any of these guys. I am surprised Cole ate the pin on this. I thought Undisputed Era was going to win, but I think I'm perfectly happy with the overall result of the match regardless. So Mo, where do we go? Where does Undisputed Era go? Are they main roster bound?
No, they're not main roster bound. No, and I hope
okay,
not.
That's good.
I hope, like I said, I really hope not. But I don't see that as being likely at all right now. I mean, I know they're really high on Cole. I mean, he was in the Royal Rumble last year, you know, and they don't do that unless they're really, really high on him. But I think they want to keep that act together. And I don't feel like they have a strong, number one, I don't feel like they trust Bobby Fish yet enough. And I think they want to keep the act together. I could see Cole coming up and then the rest coming down. I don't know that I'll ever see them really trusting Roderick Strong. Like, it's a weird thing, because Roderick Strong, I mean, he just feels like somebody who's destined, unfortunately, for 205 Live. I don't know, man. It's a really... What do you think?
I think you keep the four of them down in NXT for as long as possible. And I think eventually, if you're going to bring them up, I think you bring them all up together. Because that way, you bring them up as a group. You don't really have any major stables right now. I'd give it another 6-7 months to really let things cool down. And I'd have them come up and be... I'd have them personally go on SmackDown because, to me, SmackDown's the better show. And you have them... You can have them run amok. Ultimately, I think Cole is obviously the star at all four of those. And I think he'll be fine. He'll be fine by main roster standards. Fish and... O'Reilly. I really like O'Reilly, but I can see them just not seeing anything in him and just kind of letting that flounder. And Roddy Strong is a tremendous talent, but I just don't think they'll ever run with him for one reason or another.
They're definitely stronger together than they are apart. Like, there's no question about that. I just, you know, it's one of those things where, I don't know. I don't have a good... I don't have a good feeling about that. I've seen it too many times before where guys who are small and they come up as heels and there's like a pack mentality and then they get in there and all four of them get destroyed by a Braun Strowman or Lars Sullivan because that's how Vince sees it. Yeah, and I've seen too many times that, you know, he doesn't see wrestling ability as the most important thing, but his audience does now. And that's where one of the reasons why he's losing touch, and I understand it, you know, and wrestling wasn't the most important thing when he drew money to his two biggest times in history, when it was Hogan and The Rock and wrestling. And when it was Steve Austin and The Rock and that stuff, you know, I mean, the crowds were bored if you had a match that went more than 3 minutes on Raw, you know, so I understand why he thinks that way, but that's just not today's fan. And so he's just like, again, I see too many guys like, I don't know, the Mexicools or whatever, where you're a small team in your heels and they would get heat and beat somebody up and then just get crushed because that's how he sees them.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me about the Undisputed Era on the main roster.
Yeah. No, I'm fully absolutely agree. And that's why, again, I keep saying it. I don't want them up there. I want them to stay in NXT because I think Hunter knows what he's got on his hands. And he knows what these guys can do. to the other side of the trench, what do you think the future holds for Ricochet, Dunn, and War Raiders?
I mean, War Raiders are pretty, I'm pretty sure they're going to get the titles here. You know, I think that's pretty obvious that they'll likely get the titles at the next next pay-per-view. And, you know, that's next takeover event or even before. You know, and that'll be great. Dunn and Ricochet looks to me like a I don't know, champion versus championship match. And I do think they'll hold that off for a takeover.
Yes.
Because they gave it to us once before and then the match got screwed. It's so that we can see it and want it. It's so that they're going to try and make you feel like you almost saw it, but you never got it. Now we're going to like create that anticipation. Now you'll finally get it. And I think that'll work. And then I could definitely see one or both of them. Probably Ricochet is my first pick that in the Royal Rumble the next night.
Yeah, I think Ricochet is a very good call. Who do you think wins that? If that champion versus champion, who do you have hold all the gold?
I don't know. I can't picture one guy having the gold for all that long, but I mean, like you say, if it feels like Ricochet is closer to coming up, then you would say Dunn. On the other hand, I feel like Dunn's had the belt for, what, 450 days?
500.
You know, ridiculous. It can't be that long.
Let me look it up. And,
I think it's like 450, because they keep on saying that on TV. But either way, I feel like Dunn's probably going to lose it first. If I had to pick between the two, I think Ricochet will go over. And it's obvious that's the way they ended the show. You know, it's that is the program, those two.
Yeah. Pete Dunne has held it for 550 days. He won it on May 20th, 2017.
Okay, May 20th, 2017. That is not, is that 550? I guess it's, yeah. Wow.
It's been a long time with Dunne.
Hell of a long time.
I can see him dropping the title to someone on NXT UK and them carrying that title more along the NXT UK brand and Dunne doing more stuff over on NXT America. I'm perfectly fine if these two go to war. I really like Dunne and I really like Ricochet. So both those guys can easily go off and have an absolute barn burner of a match.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting because it's it's one of those things where I wonder who the crowd favorite, probably Dunne. I think the crowd would settle on Dunne.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see how that plays out.
And if they have them both go in as, you know, as babies or not. Like that's very interesting.
I'd be very interested to see how that all plays out because that could be a factor in what happens down the line. I'm excited to watch both those guys go again. I think both of them are great talents, and I think the program is going to be great between the two of them if that's the way it goes. We'll definitely have a better picture next week, and then I believe there's a January 3rd taping for NXT television, so then we'll have that. Those two taping dates will definitely shape up what TakeOver is going to look like. Regardless, yeah. I'm excited. I'm already ready for the next TakeOver special. Like you can plop it right in front of me right now, and I'd watch it no problem.
Well, has there ever been one that's been less than an 8 out of 10? Isn't that the floor? And the, you know?
Yeah.
they're incredible.
They've done a very... It's funny because you hear the stories about Vince just giving this to Hunter and being like, oh yeah, you go and do this. And now what it's become is just truly remarkable. I remember watching the first couple TakeOver specials. I remember Sammy, Neville, Breeze, and Tyson Kidd and the Fatal 4-Ways they had. I remember Finn being down there. I remember Knock. I remember Knock and Sammy, like just the progression that it's had. And just how you can sit there and constantly go, I really love this show. This is what I want from wrestling. It feels like it's a territory.
Yeah, I absolutely. Which is why I can watch it and ignore the main roster, and not feel like I'm getting all my wrestling I need.
Yeah. You know.
Plus, I have other outlets, obviously, too. But yeah, I mean, it's man, yeah, it's such a it's just so good. Oh. It's just so consistently good. And it's the TV show, and the, every week is good, and the, you know, the takeovers are through the roof. And I'm waiting for the day, and I do believe this is going to happen, that we hear that the takeover had more viewers than the main roster show.
I heard, and this is just on Reddit, but I heard some rumblings that there was apparently some sort of numbers had come out, and there were some rumors that the TakeOver special did better than Survivor Series.
And yeah, I mean, I've been waiting for this for a while, and it wouldn't surprise me. I only watched the TakeOver. The TakeOver was, you know, for me, I mean, I had plans that evening. I got home, it's, you know, nearly midnight. I watched it and stayed up till very, really late. Then couldn't fall asleep because I was so excited by it, you know, even though I had to get up early again the next day, because that's what TakeOver means, right? Like, it just can't see it. I am waiting for that day. If it didn't happen, I believe it will happen. But
yeah, I'm fully behind that that belief as well. I think it's coming sooner rather than later.
It'll be at a Survivor Series or a SummerSlam, most likely, that'll happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I would absolutely agree, because I think more casual wrestling fans watch the Rumble and Mania than those.
Oh yeah,
two.
If you're gonna bring people over to your house, you're gonna say you want to come over to watch TakeOver, and a bunch of people who don't really watch wrestling, you might get one or two people, but you might get 10 people for a Survivor Series, you know. But yeah, if you could get those same 10 people and just have them take the TakeOver, they wouldn't bother coming the next night. They wouldn't. They'd be like, that was so great.
Oh yeah, you don't want that sullied.
But see, to the hardcore fans, we know they'd rather watch TakeOver. I guarantee it.
Yeah,
and mainly what the WWE Network is hardcore fans mainly.
Yeah, it's not the casual fans matter for ticket sales. You don't believe? I
don't believe they mean it. I think the casual fans are casual fans and therefore don't spend any money. I think they mean almost nothing.
Because they're not the ones paying to travel to WrestleMania.
They're not paying to travel to WrestleMania, and they're not paying for the merchandise, and they're not going to buy the network even at $10. They're going to find somebody who has that and go over to their house. They're not going to buy T-shirts, which is where they make a bunch of their money. They might go to the house shows, but even the house shows, if you look at the attendance, are down so much. It's clearly not the house them going. When it's Raw, you have to rely on a Raw and SmackDown. You have to rely on to get it up to 10,000. You have to rely on some casual fans. You know,
yeah.
But no, I don't think that the casual fan has ever meant less.
Yeah, that's because interesting because
there's less of them.
Yeah.
Because the average wrestling fan is older than I am at the average age. There's, you know.
That's very good point. I'm this is definitely something that I want to get more into down the line, because I think this is a really interesting conversation.
As much as you know, I hate to say it, we need Josh on to talk about this, because he's a guy who watches these big events with his friends that he brings over, their casual fans. So he would have good insight on this. Well, he'd have some insight. I don't know if it'd be good.
Well, I think this is definitely something
it's probably better to insult him. I don't know. Is it more fun to insult him when he is here, or is it? I mean, I like it both ways.
I think I've heard that about you. Haha. I think you could flip a coin, and that's really what dictates whether it's worth insulting him in person or waiting for him to hear the podcast.
you said Dick.
Pardon?
You said Dick.
I did. So shifting gears, and I apologize for what I'm about to do to you, Mo, because this will be very interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to this. I don't want to run down the whole Survivor Series card. I don't think you want to run down the whole Survivor Series card. Let's talk about some of the bigger moments. Sure. And the first big moment to me is the no contest, Ronda winning via DQ, and Charlotte going insane. What do you think of it?
What is there to think? The next night she comes out on Monday Night Raw saying she's not at her best, but smiling and not selling anything. The reason I don't watch something like the Survivor Series is because I know even if I like something, they're going to fuck it up after. Right? Like, and that's the thing here is that that's supposed to mean something. But I know enough that I've watched enough WWE over the last several years when it's like this to know that even when they have something that should mean something, they manage to make it not. And so, okay, that happens. So it should be something you and I are talking about. But why are we going to bother talking about it when it didn't have any real effect on the product the next day?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And there was, I believe it was Meltzer, had said that Ronda did not like the angle that they ran on Survivor Series and was quite upset with how it played out. And there were reports
She didn't like being booed.
Yeah.
She's got to toughen up and stop being a mark. Marks don't like being booed. She's got to go. She needs to learn about the actual industry and realize this isn't personal. Whatever the crowd is doing, go, oh, that's awesome. They're doing this. Let's use it. You book like Bruce Lee fought, like water. She's got to learn that.
And my feeling is, because there were some rumblings that she had gone to Vince, and she plays a very big role on who she's going to face at Mania. And it sounds like Ronda wants to face Becky. It sounds like that's the way they're going. But I just wanted to get your opinion. Does it concern you in any way that Ronda has as much pull as she does right now at this stage of her career?
Well, she's bound to. She's their biggest star. Like I say, more concerns me that she doesn't get the industry. She doesn't understand it. She doesn't understand these things. But hey, when I hear something like that, like, oh, she's got to go and, you know, she's going to get some pull and she wants to face Becky. I'll tell you right now, I'm 99.9% sure we're seeing a three-way. So,
yeah, I would say so as well. As much as I'd like to see just a straight match.
Well, people that watch it will see a three-way. I won't.
Yeah. For me, personally, going to Mania, I'd much rather see the one-on-one. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm just curious because...
I think you'll see AJ and Brock one-on-one, so that'll be cool.
Hey, I'm not going to... Well, it's funny because Meltzer had come out today and said that there's some speculation that right now it's Seth versus Brock at Mania for the Universal title.
Could be.
And the build off of that will be Roman Reigns having cancer.
Uh-huh.
So that's...
Well, that's another reason why I don't watch main roster.
Yeah,
Because Seth Ambrose has to tell me that the guy is a horrible person, even though, for some reason, that's why he has cancer. All this does is make me upset. Even like when we talk about just to finish up on the Becky and the thing, even though everybody was raving about, how great, how beat up Ronda really got and how great the fire and intensity, Charlotte showed. It's the same thing as, okay, and we're coming off of just seeing, it's a post-match beat up. It's a heel turn that turned out to not be a heel turn on SmackDown. Can you explain that to me?
I'd rather not, because that would mean I'd have to get in Vince's
mind. Was there any way that this wasn't a heel turn and then she came out on SmackDown and acted totally like a babyface? Or was this not intended to be a heel turn?
I think this... I don't know. I think they saw what happened with Becky. And I don't know why, but I have a feeling that they did this because they think, oh, well, maybe Charlotte will get cheered if we do this. And went with it. And then that's why they're like, okay, you act like a babyface because this worked. So let's keep going with this. It is a heel turn because Charlotte's supposed to be a heel in this situation. Ronda's supposed to be the babyface. But I think, I don't know. I wonder if Ronda's no-selling of everything upset them where they're like, you know what? This is the way we're going to go and you're going to be the heel because this is where we want to go anyways. But
like I say, long-term, if you're going to do horsewoman versus horsewoman, the MMA horsewoman have to be the heels.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it works. They're more or less the outsiders of WWE. They weren't trained in pro wrestling. They didn't work the indie circuit to get there as much, but they got here because of their MMA background. And that's no slight against them. You do whatever you have to get your foot in that door. I fully support that. But, you know, that to me, they're the heels and those are the babyface. Because for you and me, the four horsewomen in NXT are ours in a way. Because we've seen them grow and we've seen the highs and the lows with them. And they're ours. We're going to support and cheer them.
Oh, it's no question. There have to be. So this is a heel turn, though, on this night for Charlotte. So we have established that. So let's go back and let's go, I don't know. Do you remember how Braun Strowman turned it heel?
Wasn't it he helped Drew and Ziggler beat up Roman?
What it was he and Roman were in a tag match. And in the middle of the match, the heels both came into the ring and were attacking Roman together, and he stood on the apron, and to the point where suddenly the referee decided he couldn't take it anymore and had to disqualify them. So then they're disqualified. Then he got in the ring, acted like maybe he was going to help him, and instead it was a post match beatdown heel turn. Becky turned heel. How does she do it? Match happens. They look like they're good. Post match beatdown heel turn. Daniel Bryan, he turns heel. They have their match. He hits a thing. He doesn't turn heel though. Hits a low blow. Doesn't turn heel. He turns heel. Post match match. Beats up the other guy. Heel turn. Nia Jax turns heel on Ember Moon. How does she do it? They have their match afterwards. Post match beatdown. Heel turn. You see where I'm going with this? Bobby Lashley faces Kevin Owens. Post-match beats up Kevin Owens. Heel turn. I hate their booking. I hate how they suck so much. They're so shitty at their job. When I hear about the Charlotte, I immediately go, oh, great. So even if it has a great fire and whatever, you are literally doing what you've done fucking 10 times earlier this year. The exact same. There is more than one storyline and way to have somebody turn heel. But not for them. These are just the ones off my head. I bet you there's more times if we look at the heel turns this year that's happened.
Oh, yeah.
That in a post-match beatdown, that's how that person turns heel. Because they suck so much and they can't come up with something else. They can't come up with any other storylines or any other way to do it. I know I've seen it on 205 Live. It's awful. There is more than one way to tell a story unless you suck at your job and have no creativity and you're Vince McMahon of the WWE.
No, I don't think I disagree with you on that because, I mean, you look at NXT. You look at how guys have turned heel. How Johnny turned heel. It wasn't a post-match.
How Johnny turned heel was totally different than that.
Yeah.
It was a great story.
You look at Jay White. You look at how he.
Oh, so great.
You look at how he's turned. How that all worked. You look at what ran down and disrupted the end of the Cody and Kenny match, the Gorillas of Destiny, and set up the BCOG, and now they're just Bullet Club. There's a dozen ways to skin a cat, and they just, I don't know, WWE likes playing it safe, and I don't,
think back to some of your favorite heel turns. One of my favorite heel turns of all time was the APA losing a match, where if they lost, they got, it was said, they said, you're going to lose the match, you guys are going to get fired, or basically Ron Simmons is going to lose his job. If you guys lose the match, JBL takes the pin. They're leaving, and Simmons says, "That's fine, let's go." And he goes, "Hey," he said, "just you," and that was it. Like basically, just like they just said you, and that was it. That was the heel turn. It was subtle. It was effective. It was backstage, and it took. When he came out the next week, he was booed because he literally just threw his partner and best friend under the bus. And you, it's that's what I'm talking about here. There's so many ways you can do it, and they don't. They have literally gone to this well more than 10 times in the first half of so far this year. And you've done it so many. I think they've done it, like, of those ones I mentioned, probably what are those? Like, six of those in the last, like, 8 weeks?
Yeah, four months.
How do any of them mean something to me when you keep doing them?
Yeah.
None of them mean anything to me. You keep doing them.
It almost screams like you're like, well, we don't know what to do. This is our answer. And my one of my favorite heel turns, and it's different, is the Seth Rollins turn. It's in the ring. It's a shocking moment. You don't see it coming, and it's not a post match beatdown.
It was a beatdown, but it wasn't a post match beatdown. It wasn't the same, oh, he's really with him, and yet he's not, or whatever, or just a post-match. It was different. One of my favorites, Hulk Hogan, that was a shock. Sometimes you can shock people. But you know what? When Randy Savage turned on Hulk Hogan in 1988, you saw it coming from a mile away, and it was one of the best ones ever. Even though you saw it coming, when the actual beatdown happened, and a beatdown did happen, it was about a half hour, or about 15 minutes after the match. It was backstage in the medical office where Elizabeth was being looked at, and he ran over Elizabeth literally to get to Hogan. That's a heel turn. That meant something, and it's not the same one I saw 400 times that year.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues within WWE and their booking, and there's still a few things I want to hit on, but the last thing for Survivor Series is the Brock and Bryan match, because how it started, I was not a happy camper, and then it slowly worked into something that was really good, and I bought at least once on Bryan potentially winning. Ultimately, Brock won. I felt if Bryan had kicked out of an F5, that would have helped elevate it a bit more and built Bryan up, but Bryan just seems like this whole heel turn with Bryan right now, and we can get to his promo and everything that happened on SmackDown. He just seems like a guy that wants to just absolutely kick someone's head in. And I think that's something similar to his past, Mo. Was he like that at any point in his career, where he's just kicking heads in?
Not really.
No, I thought that was his whole, when he was a heel in Ring of Honor, I thought that was his whole thing, was just stomping people into the ground and beating them.
Yeah, he was a little bit more of a cocky heel. He was a little bit more of a cocky heel.
I thought, okay, I'm quite enjoying this violent Daniel Bryan. I feel like they boggled his return. What it felt like? It felt like 2007 Chris Jericho, when he came back with the Save Us Y2J. Those vignettes went way too long because they decided we gotta stretch it out. We can't give them Y2J just yet. Jericho came back and was kind of lackluster until he turned on Sean, and then that built that whole program. I think this is what Bryan needed, and it sounds like AJ wanted the Survivor Series weekend off. And he wanted Bryan to take the title. So it was kind of Bryan asked to turn heel. AJ wanted to drop the title. And I'm sure Brock wanted to face Bryan. And I thought they did a really good job. And, you know, it's one of those few main roster matches that I'd recommend you checking out, Mo, at some point. The finish is the finish. But I think Brock gave Bryan a lot. And when Brock wants to work, boy, can he work.
Oh, yeah. Brock's the scary... The thing that I think that is most amazing about Brock to me is how good he is at selling.
Yep.
People don't realize it. He's really good at selling. He doesn't do it much, but he is really good at it.
He gave Bryan a lot. And I think it... Even though Bryan lost, him grinning and licking his lips, looking at Brock, it just... It's one of those lasting little images of, like, holy crap, this guy is just, he wants more. And Brock beat the crap out of him at different points. But this is a guy wanting more. And then his promo on SmackDown where he talked that he's had Brock beat the weakness out of him. So that match wasn't a loss because he's beaten the weakness out of him. And now this new Brian is here, and this new Brian's going to stomp some heads in.
And you know what? And he did have a vicious streak at times in ROH too, but I got to tell you, I don't think this thing's, and he did cut a nice promo. I don't think this thing's going to take though, because we've seen this too much, except for in New Japan, but even in ROH, this is true. People don't cheer the character anymore. They cheer the performer. And so it's how much they like and respect the performer. And it has nothing to do with how much they like her. And when Shawn Michaels was a baby face, but he was a terrible person backstage, people cheered him because he was a baby face on screen. Same with Hulk Hogan. This day and age, that's not the case. This day and age, if people sense that they like a person, even if he acts really, really terrible, they're just going to cheer him.
You think he's just... He was getting some boos, not like Tommaso Ciampa boos, but he was getting some boos. I'm interested to see where this goes.
I think it takes long term. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with the new...
Plus, their booking is so bad, they'll screw it up.
Yeah, at this point, you almost have to expect boggled bookings from main roster. Another thing, I know I said I only had one thing. I haven't got your two cents. What do you think of Becky Lynch right now? Like, everything that's gone on in the last, say, 2 weeks. Specifically, how...
And I heard other people say this, and I know you said this, she's the biggest star in the company. I know you put that on Twitter, correct?
Yeah.
She's not. She's not. I don't know that she's top 30. But she's the most over. And that's not the same thing as being the biggest star.
Yeah.
Being the biggest star is selling the most merchandise, drawing the most people to a house show, doing the biggest ratings, and visibility to those casual fans. And she doesn't have that yet. She could get there, though. She's awesome.
Who do you think, just quickly, who do you think is the biggest star for WWE?
Of guys that are there regularly?
Yeah.
I would probably actually say Daniel Bryan.
Okay. I was just curious your take on that. Carry on with your Becky.
No, that was it. I mean, Becky's, yeah, I mean, she's awesome. And they don't get it, but she's awesome.
I know
they're trying. They're trying. And I hate the storyline. I hate the storyline of her coming out there and the sudden babyface turn on SmackDown with Charlotte. I hate that. I think that's, again, poor storytelling. Oh, did we mention Dean Ambrose post-match beat up? That's how he turned heel. We forgot that one. There's another one.
Oh, God. Yes. Yeah. Oh, God.
There's another one. Did I mention that they don't have any ideas and they suck at what they're doing? But Becky deserves better than WWE booking. It's funny. She was not the one whoever, even in NXT, yeah, of the four horsewomen, she was number four.
Yep.
And now she's number one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Leaps and bounds. One of the things that I think is so important for wrestlers these days that help connect with the crowd is Twitter, and her Twitter game is absolutely on another level, just from changing her names to changing her bio to the tweets that she sends out. She took a shot at Jericho. It doesn't matter. The man's coming for you. And
she's real. She's genuine. That's what
he said. Yep, absolutely. And that's the thing that makes her work so well, is she is genuine. She's real. She's authentic. I think a lot of times when she talks about being held down and not getting her spot, I think that's coming from a place of truth. Absolutely. And I think that's what clicks with the crowd. There were reports from a couple different people that were at Survivor Series, and it didn't matter what match it was, but they were chanting for Becky. And I just think that type of movement, you have, Vince, I know you listen to We Talk. I know you download each week and you listen on your planes and you say, God damn it, pal. Just listen to me. Please don't boggle this. Please, please.
Yeah, but
find it.
The other thing is she's hot now, but I've seen periods where Matt Hardy was getting an incredible reaction and people were chanting for him even when. And I've seen periods where Dolph Ziggler was getting an incredible reaction and people were chanting with him when other stuff was going on. I've seen it with Fandango. I've seen it with, so we got to see like how long can you, now I think she's definitely better than Fandango, but it's a very like
wrestling fickle.
Yeah, it really is.
It's very fickle, and that's a very good point because we got to see long term how this plays out.
Cesaro's another one. Cesaro right now doesn't mean it. Think of the Cesaro section a couple of years ago.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Think about when he came back the night after WrestleMania. You know, who was a bigger star than him? And now.
And who do you blame that on? Do you blame it on the performer or the booking?
Booking.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And we've said this many times in the podcast. The booking's not good for this company and very sketchy. But Mo, I wanted to end this podcast on a positive note, or maybe a beacon of hope. Maybe potentially something that could fight the Empire. We don't fully know if this is going to fight the Empire, but you were Notre Dame when you predicted this.
I predicted a lot of things correctly this year. It's more luck than anything, but I predicted a lot of things correctly somehow this year.
I want to break down a little bit of the news. I can't break it down like Meltzer, and if you go subscribe to The Observer, he'll be able to break it down a lot more in detail. I want to get your opinion. But it sounds like there were trademarks filed. When you see that little word with the E in there, you think, I wonder who's Elite in wrestling. And then you see a couple other names that they've trademarked, specifically Double or Nothing, All Out, All In. I believe there was an All In there as well.
It was.
And you think, who does that connect with? If all the stars align, and Cody, Kenny, the Bucks, Hangman, not Marty, not yet, but you have those five, and they are part of this All Elite Wrestling, and you have the backings of a billionaire, and it's a son, and you could compare it to the Dixies.
You have internet capabilities at the moment, correct? Can you look up that owner, the Jaguars owner? I can't remember his Khan is his last name.
Yeah,
pardon me.
It is Khan.
Khan is last. And I should know the first name, and it's just escaping me. But can you look up his net worth? I'm very curious.
I looked it up last night, and from what I remember seeing, it was $7 billion.
$7 billion.
Yeah.
So you could buy and sell Vince 100 times over.
See, and that's my thinking. My thing is,
he's richer than Ted Turner was when.
Yep.
Interesting.
Now I want to give you the floor because you did make this prediction. What do you think of all this? Well, I've been dying to hear your opinion on this, and then I'll give my opinion.
Give me a little more direction than just your opinion. Which part? And there's a lot to get to here.
The speculation on this, what this could mean for pro wrestling, what this could do to WWE, every little intricate detail on this. I want to get your two cents on, like, where.
First off, WWE is going to be protective of their product and everything like that, and they're obviously going to this just gives them more leverage. It doesn't mean it's a negotiating ploy. I don't believe it is. All this does though is give more leverage to the Elite members, and all it does is going to increase how much Vince wants them, and or just wants anything, or just shut down anything that he sees as a threat, because he's been through it before. He's been scared. He's never right overcome it, you know. I mean, people don't realize how close they were to shutting the doors in the mid-90s.
Yeah,
they were so incredibly close to shutting the doors. But that said, this is not going to challenge the WWE. The only thing that challenges the WWE is the WWE. and we've talked about their booking, and we've talked about their you know, staleness and sameness and all this and that. That's what's going to be WWE's. That's what drives away the audience. It wouldn't matter what these guys are doing. If the WWE had a great product, their product would be through the roof if they had a great product. And this is only viable in any way, shape, or form because WWE is opening the door, and they're going to continue to.
Yeah.
We've talked about it, everything just from Survivor Series or SmackDown, losing every single match and then coming out the next night and never once mentioning it. Like, where's the storytelling? And yeah. And even if you do bring it up later, you can't do it like that. And this is WWE's biggest enemy is WWE. And I do believe the WWE has the metrics, even though you're making the most money. I remember WCW was making $60 million a year. And when they lost it, they couldn't regain it. The fans went away. They went away and you couldn't bring them back. And WWE is slower, but I do believe WWE, despite the big contracts that they have, I believe that this is a company that's going to end up eventually in trouble because of the damage they've done right now, sowing those seeds. So this doesn't challenge the WWE. The WWE's problem is the WWE. I think that's a very important distinction to make.
No, I absolutely agree, because no one will be able to take a swing at WWE right off the hop. The only person that can hurt WWE is themselves. But I think a little promotion like this, if you do it right, and you do it smart, and you have the right people involved, and you have the right people booking and the right people telling stories. And surprise, surprise, people, you don't need a TV deal to be viable, because we have a little thing called this magical thing, how we're recording, called the internet, where you can have.
Wait, this is on the internet?
I do believe so. This might make you change your mind about recording podcasts with us, but it is on the internet.
Thought we were just talking.
I think that. You don't need to take a run at WWE. All you need to do is have a spot that you can perform. And I think if this comes to fruition and this is a reality next year, it will not overtake Ring of Honor. It's not going to overtake New Japan. But what it can do is set the foundation for a brighter future. They can have a good year in 2019, then have a better year in 2020. And if all things go well, they could have another good year in 2021. And it's just that buildup. You don't need to take a shot at the champ right away. You need to build yourself up. And I do believe that having the Elite as part of your foundation and your core is an incredible core to have. I think that we've seen it with All In. And I believe that they can go out and deliver again. And I think that there's talent out there on the independents that they can build around and have and grow and cultivate these talents. You're still going to lose guys to WWE.
But WWE might lose guys to them.
Yep. I've already heard that there are some guys on the Meltzer was saying that there were some guys on the WWE roster that were interested in this. So if suddenly these guys that are like, well, I'm just floundering away, let me go and I'll sit on my 90 days and then I'll go to there.
It's the what a guy like Dave Meltzer, and he's like, it's all about the TV deals. It's all about the TV deals. You got to get the TV. And this is, you're thinking, oh, this is how you get exposure. This is how he's thinking, you know, and it's an old way, school way of thinking. I understand why he does it. And the same reason that Billy Corgan kind of thinks about this way, and especially more Jeff Jarrett. And he's like, oh, trying to get TV and, you know, and Kurt Bauer, not so much actually. He's very much forward thinking in new ways to distribute MLW, though there's, you know, some challenges there, but they're pretty good at that. But yeah, I mean, the idea is, oh, TV is what will pay you. I mean, wouldn't make enough off YouTube, even if you had a million people watching it a week, they'd pay you. But it's not enough to pay for your product. But there's so many new ways to have a wrestling company now in this day and age. That a guy like Meltzer, because of where he comes from, as much as he knows about wrestling more than I could ever hope to. He doesn't understand things like, if the Elite has 1 million subscribers, and then they add, let's say, Phoenix, and he gets 300,000 or 300,000 subscribers, and half of those are new people, people that don't watch the Elite. And Joey Ryan adds another 400,000, and 100,000 of those are people that don't watch the Elite. All of a sudden, you're reaching, and you can integrate all your different programs, and you can do everybody can do their own angles, but have an overall arc. And it's TV that isn't TV, and you can have all these, you can reach such a large audience, and you're selling your own product, you're selling your own arenas, booking them and taking the money from that. You don't need a television show anymore to make it viable. If you can sell to 10% a t-shirt a year of your audience, and you have 100,000 subscribers, you're doing great. It's not the way it used to be, and this is what these guys are getting, and this is what they're, you know, looking at this, obviously, is that they have, they're seeing that there's new opportunities. They don't have to run a weekly TV show every week. If they ran, if they did their TV show much like the Being the Elite, and that became the template for every wrestler in the company, say they had 30 wrestlers all doing a Being the Elite type thing and doing their own thing and working with each other to cross storylines, and each one doing a 5 to 10 minute show a week or 15 minutes or whatever. And you did this, and then you did the Tuesday Night Dynamite. And I love that name. One of the things they trademarked, streaming show on YouTube once a month on Tuesdays, and then did 4 pay-per-views a year. The amount of money you're going to sell, merchandise, the amount that you're booking for independent shows goes up, your booking fees, all this makes it viable in a new and different environment, a new different way. It doesn't have to be done the way it's always been done, just because it's always been done that way.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, you look at, like, I really do enjoy watching Being the Elite. And I still get a kick out of their little teases about H coming after them and them wanting. I still get a kick out of it. It's still enjoyable to watch. Man, I want them to do this. I really, really do, because I mean, my money goes to Ring of to New Japan. I support them, but damn it, I'd love to see them do this, because I know that it's not gonna change the game from day one, but this could be the building blocks to something big. And I like all those guys. I like the Young Bucks, I like Kenny, I like Cody, I like Marty, I like Hangman. All these guys have sucked me in. I like SCU, they're hilarious, it's great. Yeah. And you have guys like that you build off of. Like, just because Joey Ryan and Joey Janela is hurt, you have a whole storyline about Hangman Page being a Joey hunter. He got both of them.
You know, you can absolutely easily have Being the Elite be a 20-minute show or half-hour show every week that takes in elements of 5 to 10-minute shows of every wrestler having a show. Like, yep. Easily.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the SCU segments. I love watching Marty and going around.
SCU can definitely have their own show.
Yeah. And
they can do it themselves, create it themselves. And see, I mean, the biggest thing when I see this is that the Elite, I don't know how, because the thing is, All In was, it was drawn upon two things. Number one, the screw you WWE, we're going to support somebody else attitude of the fans. And number two, dream matchups. And you can't run a promotion on dream matchups. No. You need storylines and feuds. And I don't know who the feud, long-term feuds with out there. That's kind of my one thing that I don't really know. But there is a lot of talent. There's, look at this guy, A-Kid, that 2 weeks ago nobody heard of, and now everybody's talking about in England. Like, there's tons of talent.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing where I think, and you'll continuously get crops of new talent. We've seen this before where things get replenished. Wrestling has this cycle to it. And I think that this could potentially usher in a new cycle. It'd be very interesting to see how New Japan, Ring of Honor, and the other promotions react to it, because this, this could, I guarantee you they want, Ring of Honor wants exclusive deals with the Bucks and Cody. I can guarantee you they want that. So I'd be curious to see their reaction to them doing this, and just the wrestling world in general. How does this change things when you announce that you're doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I do hope they're not burning bridges. I really do.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. See, the thing about ROH is they don't want to see their business go down, obviously. On the other hand, they have no desire to try and take on WWE. We've seen that. There's no desire.
No. They have the resources
St. Clair does, but if they wanted to, but they're content to, like you say, they just want to fill some television time on their stations. Like that's it. And if they can turn a profit, that's great. And if they didn't, that would be fine too. Like it's a different thing. And New Japan, I think New Japan can grow globally because they have a good product. And if they lose the Elite, they'll still have a good product. But if they lose the Elite, their ability to come into North America and America specifically is largely hurt. And tell you the truth, as much as I love New Japan, as much as we rave about G1, I've seen enough to know that they really don't get the American market here. When you're putting Juice Robinson in the main events instead of, Tanahashi, you don't understand your own draw. You think that you need these American stars to draw in America. And the truth is, what we want to see is New Japan proper.
Yep.
And that's what they – so it's obvious to me they're not – I think they can grow as an overall worldwide thing to some degree. And but as far as doing more than two big shows a year here, I don't see it.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you on that. I think that, I wonder if they form this promotion could be a working relationship with Ring of Honor and New Japan. I'm very interested to see how this all plays out. According to Meltzer, they have already approached Impact guys, and they've more or less gotten the clear to do it as long as it doesn't conflict with any Impact dates. So
Impact is another one that's only in business because of their owners and and they just feel like they're in their last legs.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if they're letting guys do potentially sign with this if this turns into a thing. I mean, in a couple of weeks this could be dead in the water, and we're like, well, that was fun to talk about for a week, but
I don't think so.
But I don't think so either. I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but I don't want this to drag on too long, Mo. And I'm sure that we both have other things that we want to do. But I'm sure we're both going to be keeping a very close eye on this. And as we get closer, we'll have to set up our end of the year review where we talk about all things 2018.
Yeah, and because 2018 has been a fascinating year, and 2019 looks to be even more fascinating.
Yeah, there's. You reflect on at the start of the year and in the middle of the year what you think the big storylines are going to be, and some of these big storylines that you thought were going to be massive weren't as big, and now leaving 2018, you're like, there's potentially some very big storylines that could play out at the beginning of January that could shift the landscape of pro wrestling heading into 2019 and forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a fascinating, it's a fascinating time to be a pro wrestling fan, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, and it never sleeps. Mo, thank you for coming on. I'm sorry to have dragged you through Survivor Series, but we had a good talk about NXT and all.
Hey, I got wrestling. I think I sent you a message last week when I was too busy to do a show, and I was like, that's it. I got to get it all off my chest. I can't take it anymore. The WWE booking. Talking about Survivor Series let me do that. And it was talking about those heel turn beatdown finishes. That was the final straw for me, where I just had enough.
Well, forever ingrained in my memory will be heel turn beatdown. Every time I see that from now on, I'll think of your complaint, Mo.
You should see it 2 to 3 more times before the year's out. And we only have like 6 weeks left.
Oh, wow. On that note, I think I'm going to go and hide in a corner and hope that this All Elite Wrestling happens. Maybe, who knows? Maybe that's what they'll do every week, is a beat-down heel turn. Maybe we'll see you on Being the Elite It's just going to follow you everywhere now, Mo. That's
if
all
they,
your name.
If they listen to the show, they might do it just to troll us.
There we go. All right, Mo. Appreciate you on. Please subscribe to all things We Talk, from We Talk Wrestling to whatever many shows that you guys have got going.
Yeah, Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, where we review the looking for the worst, or sorry, for the ultimate B movie, looking for those movies that are so bad they're good. We're doing Christmas season. We have two with the wrestlers in it that I chose, because we each get picked two. We do eight per season. And the two holiday movies I chose are Santa Slay with Goldberg and Santa with Muscles with Hogan, which I've never seen. And that should be fun.
Ooh, there you go. And as well as make sure you check out Fresh Take and all their shows on their channel. And make sure you check us out at Stick Boy, because we'll be talking wrestling. And then me, Jesse, and Anthony will be back for more Trinity episodes. We've taken a little bit of a break, but we'll be back with a couple new episodes in the next little bit here. And it's going to be very interesting episodes.
And hopefully, sometime, probably early in the new year, maybe we can announce some really exciting things happening at that We Talk about the podcast, which, or the site, which you know of some.
Lips are sealed, but I think hopefully in 2019 more people get to find out, and that's more reason to subscribe, is just to stick around and see what happens next at We Talk. So for Mo, I'm Joel. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back.
I'm available for sex. I didn't mention that part.
There's the final plug for the day.
Plug. You see what you did there.
Thank you for listening, and we shall be back to talk more about beatdown heel turns.
I mean, I didn't say good sex.
There we go.